today.
Yes. Oh, you want to? Okay, go ahead. You want to? Hare Krishna. Today we'll be reading from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, verses 13 through 18, about the soul and the super soul. So verse 13. Geyam yatta parakshami ajgatvam ritamashnate anari matparam brahmanasara nasaramuchate. I shall now explain the knowable, knowing which you will taste the eternal. Brahman, the spirit, beginningless and subordinate to me, lies beyond the cause and effect of this material world. Om Gana Timiranda Saganan Sharan Sharakaya Chakshani Tamya Natasai. Arjuna asked 6 questions from Krishna in the beginning of the 13th chapter. He wanted to know, what is Kshetra? Kshetra means this body. All of us have a body, and all of us have a certain field of activities according to our different bodies, kshetra. And so Krishna answered that question earlier on, and Arjuna also asked, what is kshetragya? Kshetragya means the knower of the body. Who knows the body? That is the soul, and also the super soul. There are 2 knowers of the body, soul and super soul. That question is already answered. And then, later on, Krishna will answer the 2 questions. What is property? What is this material world? And what is Purusha? Or who is the person in control of this material world, or the enjoyer of this material world? That will be answered later. And he has just answered the question, what is jnana? What is knowledge? There were 18 different categories of knowledge. And now he is going to answer the question, geyam, what is the object or what is the goal of knowledge? So here it says in this verse, I will now explain this knowable, what is the goal of knowledge, knowing which you will taste the eternal. So he is going to answer the question, what is the object of knowledge? So here in Mumbai and in Mira Road, we have so many schools. What is the purpose of all that school, all that knowledge? What is the purpose of the knowledge that these students are going to get? Who can tell me? Now, so many schools, so many universities. What is the object? Huh? To earn a livelihood, okay? So that's the object. There must be some object. Otherwise, why spend so much money to go to school? So now the question is, what is the object of spiritual knowledge? There must also be an object. There must also be a purpose for getting spiritual knowledge. So this is, Krishna is going to tell us. And first, before he tells us, he says, if you get this object of knowledge, you will taste the nectar of immortality. Now, in the other schools, they cannot promise you this. If you can get some job, it will certainly, hopefully, not be an immortal job. You want to retire from that job someday. You will not get the nectar of immortality. No school is giving that object of knowledge. Srila Prabhupada, when he lectured in the MIT school, he said, where is your department? You have department of science, department of math, department of technology. Where is your department of the soul? No department of the soul. So unfortunately, although we have so many wonderful universities, I went to Northwestern University, in Chicago. Unfortunately, they did not have Department of the Soul. So now we are studying the topmost knowledge, and that is eternal knowledge. Who are we actually? We are eternal. We are spiritual beings. So, what is the object of this spiritual knowledge? The object is to become immortal. That is the object. If you get this knowledge, then you will taste immortality. So people are searching for, of course, not so many people are searching these days for immortality. They are more interested in a job and staying here in this mortal world and trying to make it a good place. But actually, that is the purpose of just keeping the body. But what is inside the body is so much more important. And that is who we are, that is the soul, because time of death, the body we cannot take. We have to leave it here. And we go off. We are the soul. We are the spiritual being. So people, sometimes they do search for the nectar of immortality. In the past, they have searched, but who is actually finding this nectar of immortality? Who's finding it? Nobody. So long, long ago, there was one king of Iran. And he got a book containing the secret to raise the dead. And you had to go to the Himalayas to find some herbs and trees from the high mountains of the Himalayas. And if you could get these herbs and these trees, these leaves, then you can make this nectar of immortality. So he sent his minister to India to find these herbs and trees. He went to the mountains of the Himalayas. He looked everywhere with the help of the locals, but he could not find anything. So then he met one sage, one very spiritually minded person, famous sage, who had also searched for this nectar. And he discovered that this nectar described in the book was actually an allegory. It's a story which had a symbolic meaning. So what was the meaning of that story? The high mountains of the Himalayas are the lofty intelligence of the sages. The sages, it was their high intelligence. That is the mountains. So what are the herbs and the trees? They are the writings. They are the books of these sages. So the wisdom taken from their books is the nectar of immortality. So here we have one of these books here from the sage Vyasadeva from the Himalayas, from Badrikashram. He has written this book, and the wisdom taken from, so the book itself is the herbs taken from his high intelligence, and the wisdom, the knowledge to raise the dead is the knowledge of this Bhagavad Gita. So if we hear this knowledge, then we can revive our dead intelligence, which is now engaged, which is now being used for so many dead things in the colleges and universities and in the workplace. Everybody is engaged in moving around dead things, not so much life things. So we want to find out the essence of knowledge, and that is the soul. And this book will have the power to actually revive your spiritual intelligence. If you get the wisdom from this book, then you will wake up from the dead. So in the purport, Prabhupada says that by knowledge of the knower, soul and super soul, one can relish the nectar of life. So this verse 13 comes after all the categories of knowledge. So many categories. And this is talking about the nectar. Now in chapter 2 of Bhagavad Gita, there is also a verse very similar to this. And that is Yamanina Tatyantyete Yusham Purushashava Samadukaspam Dhiram Saumitatvaya Kalpate. Arjuna, a person who is not disturbed by happiness and distress, steady in both, is certainly eligible for liberation. Or actually the Sanskrit, Saumitatvaya Kalpate. He will get this Amrita again. Now, I don't know if you have read Bhagavad Gita, but there is a verse that comes before this verse 15 in chapter 2. And in that verse 14 of chapter 2 is described one quality which you need to become eligible for liberation. It's a quality for people who live in this world, who have to go to work every day, who have to go to school, who have to take care of their families. It's a very special quality. Can anybody tell me? Yes? Tolerate. We must tolerate. Tamstitikshasva Bharata. So then Krishna says, if you can tolerate, then you will taste the nectar of immortality. Very difficult to tolerate. You have to go on the traffic to your work, the buses, the trains, even the cars. Very, very difficult. Then you have to go to work. And you have to work the whole day. And most of the time is spent away from the family. I know, and your husband coming home, I don't know what time, 12 or 1 at night, and leaving for work at 6 in the morning. It's very, very difficult. It's not easy. And so this is, so therefore, tolerate. We have to tolerate. If you can tolerate, you can get the nectar of immortality. You'll become eligible. You become eligible. This is the beginning quality, tolerate. And this is the beginning of knowledge also here. Mani tvam adam bitvam. That humility, tolerance. These are the beginning of knowledge. So what is this amrita? What is this nectar? Krishna katha. Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Charinamrita. There are so many amritas. Also Namamrita. Yesterday we were tasting, those of you who went on the Harinam, we were tasting yesterday a different kind of amrita, the Namamrita. The amrita, the nectar of the holy name, Shri Shastika. In the first verse, Lord Chaitanya, he says, Prati param pranamrita svadanam, pranamri amrita asvadanam. If you chant the holy name at every step, you will taste this nectar of immortality. Okay, are we technically okay? Thank you. All right, we will try again. So, Srila Prabhupada says that also in the fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it is confirmed that if you simply understand Krishna in truth, then I shouldn't touch it. Maybe it doesn't like me to touch. Okay, now are we happy? Microphone. Yeah, I think you need to sit here and check. Okay, we're back online. So in fourth chapter, Janma Karma Chamedivyam, Evam Yo Veti Tatvataha, that anyone who understands, in truth, my appearance, my activities, he will not take birth again. He will become immortal. No more death. This verse says the same thing. If you understand the soul, you will become immortal. And super soul will also come in the next few verses as well. So the human form of life is meant for this purpose. This is the object of knowledge, and this is the purpose of having a human body. To find out this nectar of immortality, that I am the soul. Why am I not immortal? I should be immortal. We don't want to die. That's the proof of the soul, that we don't want to die. We don't want to get old. We don't want to get sick. Because the nature of the soul is there is no birth, no death, no disease, and no old age. But unfortunately, now we are in the body, so we have to experience these things. So now we have to tolerate and go on with our spiritual life. So Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he came 500 years ago to establish this object of knowledge, this purpose of life, chanting Hare Krishna and becoming immortal. Prabhupada said, chant and be happy. So we also want to chant Hare Krishna and become immortal. Read Bhagavad Gita, become immortal. Lord Chaitanya said, on my order, you should all become guru. Whoever you meet, you should tell them about Krishna. Tell them, you are immortal. Why are you suffering here? Don't suffer. Chant Hare Krishna and go back to Godhead. So if you can understand knowledge, you become immortal. By the end of this class, anyone who understands his soul, he'll become immortal. He will get liberation. He will become eligible for liberation. So the next verse, verse 14, Lord Krishna starts talking about himself, about Super Soul, the Lord in the heart. Lord in the heart. So the soul is also in the heart. And the Lord is also in the heart. There's two in the heart. There is the Lord, and there is the soul. That is us. So now Krishna describes a little bit about himself, so we can understand. This is verse 14. Everywhere are his hands and legs, his eyes, heads, and faces, and he has ears everywhere. In this way, the super soul exists, pervading everything. So, what are these hands and legs and eyes and ears everywhere? What are these? Actually, all of you have hands and legs and eyes and ears. And actually, they belong to Krishna. And that's why he says, everywhere are my hands and legs. Because all of your hands, all of your legs, all of your eyes, your ears, they belong to Krishna's. And what is the proof? You can't take them with you at the time of death. That means they must belong to somebody else. You have to give them back. To whom they belong. You have to give him back to Krishna. So, if you want to be happy in this life, then you use your hands, your legs, your eyes, your ears in the service of Krishna. Why would that make you happy? Because Krishna, his name is Govinda. Govinda means pleasure of the senses. So if you connect your ears, hearing Krishna's name, if you connect your tongue, tasting Krishna's prasada and speaking and chanting the holy name, if you connect your eyes with seeing the beautiful form of Krishna, then you can be happy. Because Govinda is an ocean of happiness. And if you can connect with him, then you can actually be happy. So this is, we have these eyes, these legs, these hands and faces, and they're meant to be connected with Krishna. Somehow, even though we have their material in this world, if we connect them with Krishna, then they will become purified, and we will not suffer because of them. So in the beginning, Arjuna was hesitating to fight. He thought, these are my hands and legs, and I should not, I should use them how I want to use them, and I should go to the forest. And Krishna said, no, you should use them the way I want you to use them. You should fight. You should surrender to me and fight. And after hearing this whole Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna said, yes, you're right. Harishe Vachanantava, I will do what you say. I will use my legs and my hands for you. And this is mukti. This is liberation. When we actually realize that our senses are meant to be used for a spiritual purpose. Now, that is the first meaning of this verse, that our senses belong to Krishna. Second meaning of this verse, everywhere are my hands, his hands and legs, eyes and faces. If he has hands and legs and eyes and faces, then how can he be formless? That's the highest thing. They even say sometimes that Krishna came from the formless. But no. If he's formless, how can he say, everywhere are my heads and faces and eyes and legs and hands? He has senses. He has form. And we will hear a little bit more in the next verse about his senses. But I'd like to tell you one very special verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. It's about Lakshmi. Lakshmi, everybody knows who is Lakshmi, right? And everybody in India, a lot of people, they worship Ganesh and Lakshmi. Now it's the time for Durga, I believe. Isn't it? Yeah, Durga. She's also very popular in India. Lakshmi, but anyway, Lakshmi is there. And she is actually full of spiritual qualities. But there is somebody who enjoys Lakshmi. And it's not us. Guess who? Narayan, Krishna. Lakshmi is meant to be enjoyed by Narayan. So in this verse it describes Narayan, Super Soul, Lord of the Heart, is there. And soul is also there. And Lakshmi is, but guess where Lakshmi is? It says Lakshmi is the form of our body, senses, and minds. That's Lakshmi. This body is an expansion of Lakshmi. Our mind is an expansion of Lakshmi. Everything is her expansion. mind and the heart. We've got our soul. We are in the heart. Super soul, soul. And then we have here the expansion of Lakshmi. Now, what should we do as soul with Lakshmi? We've got Lakshmi, we've got Narayan, and we are the soul. So what shall we do with Lakshmi? Yes, we should give Lakshmi to Narayan. Lakshmi belongs with Narayan, right? We should not try to enjoy Lakshmi ourselves. These senses are her expansion. So we should not try to enjoy these senses ourselves. We should give them for Krishna. We should offer our senses, our body, our mind, which is expansion of Lakshmi, to Narayan, our super soul in the heart. So that's what this Bhagavatam verse is saying. We should offer Lakshmi to Narayan. Now, verse 15. The super soul is the original source of all senses, yet he is without senses. He is unattached, although he is the maintainer of all living beings. He transcends the modes of nature. At the same time, he is the master of all the modes of material nature. Now, I'm going to ask you a question about one of these sentences. Here it says, the super soul is the original source of all senses, yet he is without senses. Now, he just said the verse before, I've got my senses. But what does this mean now that he's saying he is without senses? What does that mean? This sounds like a contradiction here. At first he's saying, I have my hands, my legs everywhere. Now he's saying, without senses. What can that mean? Who can tell me? Good, very good. Okay, they're not ordinary senses. What kind of senses are they? Spiritual, very good. When you hear from Upanishads, when you hear from Gita that the Lord is without senses, it means he is without material senses. He has spiritual senses. Now, what can spiritual senses do? They can do so many things. He can eat with his eyes. He can create with his eyes. He created this whole world just by his glance. He can kill somebody with his hand. He doesn't need the weapon. The washerman, there was a dobi in Mathura who didn't want to give clothes to Krishna. So Krishna got angry and just cut off his head with his hand. He can do anything with his senses. His senses are interchangeable. And when we offer food to Krishna, he can accept with his ears from our prayers. He can accept with his eyes just by looking. And he can also accept with his hands, although he's so far away in Goloka Vrindavan. Because, he said, everywhere are my hands. So when we offer him food, he can stretch his hand from Goloka and take it. And there are examples. There was one little boy, I think he was the son of Mukunda in Lord Chaitanya's time. And, or was it somebody else's son? I can't remember. Raghunandan was a son, I think. He was the boy, and his father had to go away on some business. So he said to the child, you please make the offering to the deity for me. And so the son went in, very small boy, 5 years old, and he brought him the offering, and he asked, please eat. He asked the Lord, he offered prayers, please eat. And then he saw that the food was still there on the plate, and he said, please Lord, if you don't eat, my father's going to be very angry with me. He told me I should feed you. And so, because the boy was crying and begging, the Lord actually came and ate the food, all the food. There was nothing left. And then he came out with the empty plates, and she had told the mother, and she couldn't believe. And then the father came home, he said, what happened to all the food? Did you eat everything? And he said, no, the Lord ate. I didn't eat. So then the father didn't believe him. So then he had the son make the next offering. And the father was hiding and watching, and he saw the son was begging and crying. And finally the Lord came and ate the food. And then the father was so excited. He said, oh, you are the real devotee. And Lord Chaitanya asked him one time, who is the son and who is the father? And he said, yes, my son is actually the father. He's the real devotee. Because he can make the Lord eat. He came and ate. so this is the nature of the senses of the Lord. Also, at the time of creation, so many universes are coming out from just the holes of his body, the hair holes of his body. We have other things. We have perspiration. And from him, of course, from Vishnu comes this Karna ocean, the ocean of perspiration, actually. And from, so at the beginning of creation, the universes also come out from his portal. So actually, he does not have senses like we have. We cannot do that. We cannot create by our glance. We cannot make the universes come out from the holes of our body. So that's the difference between soul and super soul. He is the source of all senses, but he is without material senses. We have material senses, unfortunately, in this world. He is unattached, although he is the maintainer of all living beings. Now, I'm sure that there is not one mother or father in this room who maintains his children who is not attached. Everybody here is very attached to their children. But Krishna, everybody is his children, Mahavishnu, but still he's unattached. Although he's maintaining everyone. He's maintaining all of us. Without his maintenance, we cannot exist. One way he's maintaining us is by his glance. It is said not only at the time of creation does the Lord glance on the living beings. If he would stop glancing, this whole world would be finished. He's glancing right now. He's looking. He's watching. And if he didn't, everything would be finished. So he's maintaining, but he's unattached. He transcends the modes of nature, and he is the master. Now again, some people say he is without form. So why do they say that? Why do they say God is without form? It's because they cannot see his form, so they say he is without. They don't have the spiritual eyes. Even I cannot see your mind. You cannot see my mind. So how can you see the soul? It's way beyond our senses to see. So how can we see Krishna? Some people say, can you show me God? Not possible. It's way beyond our material senses to see. Of course, he does come. He's very kind because he knows that we only can see material things. So he comes in the form of the deity so that we can actually see his form. And that is not different. We call Krishna to come and be there, and we can actually offer him food, and we can offer prayers, and we will get answers, and we will get prasad from the deities. So sometimes Srila Prabhupada also said that these people, these impersonalists, they prefer to think Krishna has no form because actually they're afraid. Because if Krishna was there and he was watching everything and they're doing so many nonsense things, what's going to happen to them afterwards? So they say, okay, he's without form. He cannot see what I'm doing. He has no eyes. He has no legs. He cannot catch me. So, but he's not far away. We will hear in the next verse how Krishna, he is far, but he's also very near to us. He's right in our heart, super soul. So verse 16. Bahirantascha bhutanam macharam charamivacha sivshmarvattad avikyayam durdastam chantike chitat. The supreme truth exists outside and inside of all living beings, the moving and the non-moving. Because he is subtle, he is beyond the power of the material senses to see or to know. Although far, far away, he is also near to all. So sometimes we may also feel, even though we are all devotees, most of us, that the Lord is very far away from us. That Krishna is far away from us. When is that time when we feel, oh, Krishna, or we want Krishna to be far away from us? When do we feel that he is so far, I cannot see him, I cannot reach him? Is it at work? Is it at home? Is it at school that we feel? When is it do we feel Krishna is far away? Perhaps when we turn on the TV, and Krishna's far away. Yes? Or if we go to a Bollywood movie or watch it on TV, Krishna may be far away from us. So sometimes, and that's why we all came to this world, it's because we would like him to be far away. So we came here, which is pretty far away from him. He's in the spiritual world. So there's an example given of a father and a son. The son is sitting with his girlfriend. Now in the West they have girlfriends and boyfriends. Maybe not, I think in India it's also starting now. Girlfriends and boyfriends. So the boy is sitting with his girlfriend on the living room couch. And he wants to, you know, have a relationship with his girlfriend. And then the father comes and he sits next to him. And so the son is thinking, when is he going to go away? Like to be with my girlfriend and maybe enjoy. So that is just like super soul. Sometimes we want to forget Krishna, we want to get into the material world, but then somehow Krishna comes and sits next to us and says, no, this is not good. We hear a little voice, a conscience saying, no, this is not a good idea. I should go to temple instead. Or I should pick up my mala and chant Hare Krishna instead of watching TV. I should read this Bhagavad Gita. So therefore, then we might want super soul to be far away from us at that point. If we want to forget Krishna. And when we want to remember him, then we can feel he is very near. We feel yes. When I chant his name, when I go and see the deities in the temple, I feel that he's very near. So he's outside, he's inside. And for some people, he is always far away. For which people is Krishna very far away? Which kind of people? Demoniac, okay. Who else? Krishna is very far. Those who don't want to remember. Impersonalists. Right. Impersonalists. Those who don't want to remember. Demoniac. And those who want to enjoy this world. For him, Krishna is very far. And for whom is Krishna very near?
Devotees.
Very good. There is a verse in Brahma Samhita. Fantastico Tisharava. So Vyastiya Prabhasinte Vichintya Datve Govindamari Purisham Dhamam Pajami. That the yogis, for the yogis are also very far away, because they are trying to reach the spiritual world with their material mind. And their mind is, you know, how fast is the mind? And the yogis can travel at the speed of the mind. But Lord Brahma says, even if they go for millions of years at the speed of the mind, they still cannot reach the tip of the toe of the lotus feet of Krishna. Very far away. Because you cannot reach spiritual things by material means. So this is he's very, very far away for impersonalists, for yogis, for jnanis, for karmis, but for devotees, he's very, very close. Devotion, it describes devotional service attracts even Krishna. So if he sees some words of love, Krishna comes very fast. He hears your words of love. Vedeshu Durlabha, the Vedas, for the Vedas is very difficult, very far away. They cannot understand Krishna. Adurlabham Atmabhakta, but very close for the devotees. You may try to read the Vedas for millions of years. But you will not be able to find Krishna. Very difficult to find. You will find so many yajñas. You will find so many things. But Krishna is hidden in the Vedas. Not easy to find. So many Vedas are there. How will you find? So therefore we are very fortunate that we have Gita and Bhagavatam. Very easy to find Krishna in Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. But only Gita as it is. If you take another Gita, it will be also very difficult to find Krishna in that Gita. They will say, don't surrender to Krishna. Surrender to the unborn within Krishna. So even I read another Bhagavad Gita before I read Prabhupada's, and I I didn't understand anything about Krishna. In fact, that particular author didn't go beyond the first six chapters, only yoga. He didn't go into the bhakti part. Of course, there's bhakti everywhere, and Prabhupada shows that in his purports. Even in the first and second and third, all the chapters, bhakti is there. But you won't find it if you are not a bhakta, a devotee. That's why Krishna says to Arjuna, because you are my friend and my devotee, therefore you can understand me. Only devotees can understand Krishna, because he is only understood by devotion, by love. He is a person. Even if you yourself, you cannot be understood by someone who hates you, who says you do not exist. What if someone comes and says to you, face your face, you do not exist. So they're saying God does not exist. So how can they understand Krishna? How can they understand? Not possible. Not possible. So if we know Super Soul is there, right with us, how will we behave? We will try to do our best to serve him. So I also told one experience yesterday of my experience with Prabhupada. When Srila Prabhupada was here, I was in Calcutta. I was pujari in Calcutta temple, Radha Govinda. I was doing a Mangalarti that time, 4:30 in the morning. And I was offering the ghee lamp, and I turned around, and right behind me was Srila Prabhupada, standing just 6 inches behind me. There was no separation between temple and deities, just one little chain. And Prabhupada was standing right behind and watching. And that whole arti, I was very conscious of what I was doing every second, what I was thinking. Even I didn't want to think a nonsense thought. And I was trying to do everything perfectly because I knew Prabhupada was watching me. Every step, every inch, he was watching what I was doing. So afterwards, after that arti, I had the understanding that why only during that arti? Everything I do, it should be with that consciousness, that Prabhupada is standing right behind me and watching what I'm doing and what I'm thinking. And then everything will be very good. My service will be nice. So Srila Prabhupada, he's watching. And Krishna also is listening when we chant his holy name in the morning. It is our quality time, our time for meeting with Krishna. When we chant, when we pick up our mala and we start chanting, Krishna comes and he sits just like you're sitting in front of me. He's listening to you chant. So if you have this consciousness of chanting and Krishna is coming and listening, how will you chant the holy name? How will you do your service if you know Krishna is listening, Krishna is watching? He's listening to every word you say and he's taking notes, just like we take notes in class. Krishna also, of course, he doesn't have to write it down. He has perfect memory. But he is listening to us. And so this is the super soul. This is the super soul. He is existing inside, he is existing outside. And we'll talk a little bit about that tonight, about how to see Krishna inside and outside. Queen Kunti in her prayers, she will say that you are inside, you are outside, you are everywhere. So we will discuss that, and we will have some homework for you to do tomorrow to see how is Krishna, how to see Krishna in your life. So we're giving you a little introduction now with the super soul. Now verse 17. Abhivaktam chabhuteshu vivaktam eva chastitam bhutta parti chitajgeyam kashishnu pavishvicha. Although the super soul appears to be divided among all beings, he is never divided. He is situated as one. Although he is the maintainer of every living entity, it is to be understood that he devours and develops all. So we have an analogy here of in the purport of the sun, that Prabhupada says that he's in everyone's heart. But he looks like, okay, I have a super soul, you have one, there's so many super soul, but it's only one super soul. Now, the example is given of the sun. Now we have the sun, the sun is over India, the sun is over Europe, the sun is over Africa. But we don't say, okay, now the sun over here is an Indian sun. The sun over Africa is African sun. son of a Europe is European son. No, we don't say that. So why do we say that about God? Now this is a Krishna is a Hindu God, Indian God. No. So this is one understanding of this analogy. Super soul, God is everywhere. God is in everyone's heart. But we think in terms of different types of God. We think, no, that is your God, this is my God. But no, it's just like the sun. You cannot say the Christian God is in America and the Hindu God is here in India. No, it's the same God. Another example is just like the TV. The TV station is in one place. But if you have the proper receiver, you can get the waves, or what you call them, I don't know. The TV waves are coming into your TV set so many places, although it's coming from one place. So super soul is like that. One super soul, he's reflecting in the TV of our heart. Unfortunately, we cannot see him right now because our TV is broken. We have the super soul, we have the whole spiritual world in our heart, we have Goloka, we have, some of you might have Ayodhya in your heart, and some of you might have another place, Mahavishnu Loka, but we cannot see because it's covered by so many material things. So by chanting the holy name, then we can uncover, we can fix our TV. We need actually chanting the holy name, we need guru, we need sadhu, devotees, we need shastra. And these are the repairmen. Just like I was in a room yesterday with a broken AC, and I saw the repairmen come and they took the AC to fix it. So we cannot take, of course, out our heart. We cannot take out that TV, it will stay there in our heart. But we have to bring in the repairmen, the guru, sadhu, shastra, who can fix our TV so we can see the whole spiritual world in our heart every day, every moment. My son, Govinda, when he was 14, 15 years old, he said to me, if I could only talk to Super Soul, I would never be bored again. Children, boredom is sometimes a problem. They get bored. Of course, not in India. You have so much schoolwork here. But for some people, some teenagers, boredom is a problem. So, but he's a devotee, so he's saying, I wish I could talk to Super Soul. So we can all talk to Super Soul. Every day when you chant your rounds, when you chant your Hare Krishna, that's your time to talk to Super Soul. And you can also hear what he has to say to you. So this is all the knowledge about Super Soul. And we can contact Super Soul every morning when we chant the holy name. So the last verse that I'll discuss today is verse 18. Jyoti shama mita jyoti stamasa param uchate gyanam gayam gyanagamyam hiri sarvasasistitam. He is the source of light in all luminous objects. He is beyond the darkness of matter and is unmanifested. He is knowledge. He is the object of knowledge, and he is the goal of knowledge. He is situated in everyone's heart. So the first thing he says, he is the source of light in all luminous objects. Now in this room, we see some light. My question to you is, where is that light coming from? Easy question, not a trick question. From outside, yeah. Yeah, okay, these lights. We've got this light here. It's coming from, well, we can say from these bulbs. Actually, it's very close. But there's another light here besides this. Where is that? Sun, okay. So we've got the bulbs, and we've got the sun. Now, if an intelligent person, if he comes in this room, he will not say that the light is everything. Where's the light coming from? So here we have, okay, so if you have the light bulb, then you have the source of light. You also have the sun. The sun is the source of light. But less intelligent people think, no, I will just merge with the light. There is no source of the light. So when they think of Brahman, when they think of the spiritual light, they think that is the end. That is the highest. But an intelligent person, he will say, no, there must be a source, because we don't see light without a source. There must be a source of the light. Just like there's a light bulb here, and there's the sun outside, that is giving us light. Now, When you have a mirror and you reflect the sunlight from a mirror, the mirror itself cannot give you light. But because it's reflecting the sun, then it can give you light. So something you may not know is that the sun is like a mirror. It's reflecting light from somewhere else. It appears to be the source of light, just like these light bulbs. They also appear to be the source, but there is another higher source, that is the powerhouse. So, for the sun also, there is a source. It is like a mirror. It's getting its power from somewhere else. Who can tell me where is the sun getting its light from? Okay, the effulgence, or the Brahman Jyoti. And then the next step is, of course, there's the Brahman, the light, the spiritual light. The next step is, where is that light coming from? And that is the effulgence of Krishna's body. So ultimately, the light we see in this room is coming from Krishna's body. And Prabhupada said, that is why the sky is blue. Because it's a reflection in this world of his body. And sometimes it's very blue, very like sham color. Sometimes you'll see in the autumn, in the fall time, after the monsoon, then it becomes very dark, dark blue. Early in the morning, late at night, you see the sham color. And in the daytime, because of pollution, it might be a lighter color here, in Bombay especially. You may not get that very dark color. In Vrindavan we get it sometimes. We get this dark, dark, Mayapur, you get the dark, dark blue sham color. So this is Krishna. He says, I am the source of light. He is the source of light. And the proof is that the sky is blue. So these are the qualities of the Super Soul we have heard today. He is the object of knowledge. He is the goal of knowledge. He is in our heart. He's very close and he's very far away at the same time. So now I'll stop here. If you understand this knowledge, this is the nectar of immortality, and you will become immortal if you understand the soul and the super soul. So any questions about these verses today? Yes? Hi, Krishna. And out of fear also, out of fear, because if there were a God and if there were a form, then they would be accountable for their activities. They would be accountable. So they would prefer that there is no, just a force, an energy, a light, that they don't have to report to if they do something. Actually, it's like atheism. Impersonalism is covered atheism. Shankaracharya, he gave us covered atheism because Buddhists came before him and they were actually atheists, voidists. So therefore Shankaracharya brought people back to the Vedas, but he used the same philosophy, unfortunately. So they became still atheists but believers in the Vedas. And then Lord Chaitanya came and he took the Vedas and showed the personal path to Krishna. So it's step by step. Buddha came, he stopped the Vedas because they were misusing, performing animal sacrifice. Now I was just in Nepal, and that is, now is the season, Navratri, where they were, the children were coming to the temple, and they were telling, you know, we have a problem because in our family, they worship demigods, and they killed the animal, and we have to see it. We are forced to be there, and they take, and we have to take our finger, put it in the blood, and put it on our head. This is poor children. And the children are like Prahlad, like little devotee children. And they're all becoming Krishna conscious, but their parents are forcing them to put their hands in the blood of the animals. And it's very, very difficult for them. Now they are worshipping the demigods. But the parents don't understand the demigods are all vegetarian. They don't eat meat. So who is eating the meat they offer? That is ghosts and witches. So they are not getting devi prasad. They are getting the ghosts. Raksha Saprasha. And so they become that mentality. They become cruel. And so all of them are, Durga is vegetarian, everybody's vegetarian, all the demigods. You have to be vegetarian to be up there. You can't go to Swarga unless you're a vegetarian. Up there nobody eats meat, and especially the head demigods. They are all Vaishnavas. Durga, Parvati, Shiva, they're Vaishnavas. They're worshipping Krishna. So they eat Krishna Prasad. If you go to Puri temple, then you'll see that first they offer to Jagannath, and then they give to the different demigods for the Prasad, Jagannath Prasad. Because they're hankering for Jagannath Prasad. Yes? Yes. This is described in the 9th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Ekatvena Pritaktvena Bahudha Vishvato Mukham, that there are three ways to worship Krishna indirectly. One is to worship the One, the Light. One is to worship many forms. So this is indirect because the problem with their worship is they think each of the form is God. This is the problem. With the many form worship. They say, okay, they're all one. Krishna is Krishna, Durga, Shiva, Ganesh. It's all the same. All these forms are just, it's the same as everything's one. It's the same as it's all one. Because they don't understand that these many forms are all servants of the one Krishna form. They don't understand demigods are the servants. And therefore they should directly worship Krishna. Proper worship of demigod is there if you worship the demigod as a servant of Krishna. And that is given in Brahma Samhita by Lord Brahma, how to worship Ganesh. He's holding on his tusks the lotus feet of Nrisimhadeva, so he can destroy all obstacles on the path of progress of the three worlds. So if you want to understand the relationship of the demigod, each demigod with Krishna, then you can study Brahma Samhita by Lord Brahma. And so that's Pritaktvena. The problem is that they see all the forms as each one is God, the Supreme. That's the problem with the many forms. Formless is, all the forms are coming from the formless. So ultimately you worship the form and the deity, then you throw it away. Because the goal is to become without form. That is the goal. Because all these forms are giving us trouble. This world is form and form, so they equate form with suffering. Now it's true, the material body you can equate with suffering, but they have no knowledge of the spiritual form, the Satchidananda, the spiritual body, that knowledge they do not have, and of the spiritual form of Krishna. The demigod forms are temporary for this world, to give some material thing. But the eternal forms of Vishnu and Krishna, they are for liberation. These demigods cannot give liberation, they give you something in this world. They're temporary. When this universe is finished, their forms will be finished. But Vishnu, Krishna, they are eternal. They will always be there. And so that's the difference. And then there's, yeah, go ahead. And then there's a third category, and that's those who are the pantheists, who see God in the tree. Or they think God is the tree. The tree is God. The dog is God. The floor is God. The sky is God. So they see God everywhere, but they see it in the wrong way. It's true. Everything is the energy of God. That's how we see. We see, yes, God is in the heart of the tree. He is super soul in the tree. And the tree is his energy. So therefore we use the tree for his service. We take the fruits and we offer them to him. But they say, no, the tree is God, the dog is God. And they worship the dog. And they kill the cow. The cow is not God. The dog is God. Cow we kill. Dog we eat. A dog we serve. A dog we serve. Yeah. He's showing forms. Those forms are described Dashavatar. You have to read Bhagavatam to understand which of the forms are Krishna's. Radha Krishna, Sitaram, Gornitai, he has given us these forms. so that we will go to the spiritual world. So we can follow him, follow Lord Chaitanya, follow Srila Prabhupada, and concentrate on these forms. But form Jagannath, the forms you see in our temple, that is given to these are given to us by the acharyas for our upliftment. You have a question? Question is, Krishna is creating, but he's not attached. So how can we in our life not be attached? The way to do that will be shown by Kunti. She's also praying, you know, please take away my attachment and give me real attachment. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, if you have a family, he is the example of a family man who was at the same time detached. He had 10 total children. And he spent quality time with each child every day, 10 minutes. With every single child. How did he do that? Because in his prayers, he explained how he saw his family. He said, this is your family, Krishna. They are your servants. They are your maidservants. I am maintaining your family for you. This is my service for you. This is your family. So I am just trying to work to maintain your family, Krishna. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay. That was Bhaktivinoda Thakur's view of his family life. So we can follow him. And he worked as a judge in the day. He took care of his family. He at nighttime he slept maybe 4 hours, and then he got up and he wrote all his books. So many hundreds of books, song books, all the song books Bhaktivinoda Thakur wrote. So he is an example of how to be a Mahatma in Grihastha life. In family life. How to see your family in connection with Krishna. If you see it disconnected, then it will be a problem and a source of suffering. If you see it connected, then it will be uplifting and liberating for you and for your family. Yeah. And you will become attached to Krishna. Yes.
Maybe Krishna is created with my this Krishna
nice realization. Krishna is not attached to our body, he's attached to our soul. He's also attached, he wants to protect us as well, even this body. He says in 9th chapter, whatever you lack, I will give. And whatever you have, I'll protect, even your body. He'll take care of it. He is maintaining, but also actually with detachment, because we may want so many things, but he may say no. We may want to have the biggest house in Bombay, but he will say no, we live in a humble flat. We may want to go to the West, many Indians have that desire, and he may say no, you stay in Mira Road, Bombay. So he's also taking care. He may say no, you go and you preach. You go to the West and you preach. Good idea, you go. You may say yes, but not the way you think you want to go. Some people are thinking, I will go to the West, make so much money, become rich. But now the West is a difficult place to become rich. America anyway, because it's going through a recession. And people are losing, every 7 seconds somebody is losing a house. The house is being taken away from them in America. My father is losing his house. I have met more brothers. My brother and my father and my son has to move out and go to LA. And so that is happening in America now. And my father has many children. He will go with somebody. But, difficult for him because now he's 95. He lived his whole life in this house. And now the government is taking it away because no money. So this is the position. We may think, okay, now I have paid for my house, I have paid my mortgage, I have paid for my flat, I will stay here. No. Even if you have paid everything, you still have to die. take it with you. You cannot take your flat. You cannot take your family. You cannot take anything with you. And so therefore, better to have Krishna with you. He will come with you at time of death. Lord Chaitanya, Prabhupada, they will come and they will take you at the time of death. Okay, any last question? Because now it is a little late. Okay, although it's Srila Prabhupada, you may come tonight at 7:30 for the first session of prayers of Bhagavad Gita.